Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod, the daily podcast brought to you by the team behind Squawk Box.
NYC, this is CNBC Control 2.
CNBC's essential morning show.
He's here too.
Every day, get the best stories, debate, and analysis from the biggest names in business and politics.
All right, we're coming to it next.
Today on Squawk Pod.
The scarlet letter right now in the Democratic Party is B for billionaire.
Or B for Bloomberg. New York City's former mayor considering a late launch into the race for president.
It's the difference between a primary and when you get to the national election.
So I got two things, a trial balloon and a pipe dream.
Is it the longest of long shots or a new front in the war on wealth?
People say, oh, I hate rich people. No, you don't. You hate rich people until you become rich.
Here's the bottom line. There's a whole lot more of us than there is of them.
Those stories plus Disney, The Gap, and hearing the other side.
Stop with this. Stop with this. Free markets. Free markets.
Ooh, what's happening here?
I'm CNBC producer Cameron Costa. It's Friday, November 8th. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Roll pray. Track. Take. Cue, Andrew.
Good morning. Welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We're live at NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Andrew Ross, working along with Joe Kernan and Melissa Lee this morning. Becky is off today.
First up today, billionaire in chief? Michael Bloomberg might be eyeing the White House. He's the eighth richest man in the world, which would make him the richest person ever to run for president. Is his wealth more of a hindrance than a help in his pitch for the presidency? Here's Andrew with the story.
The 2020 election looks like it may be getting a shakeup. We're going to see NBC News reporting that Michael Bloomberg, the billionaire former mayor of New York, is preparing to enter the Democratic presidential primary. He would need to file in Alabama today to get on the primary ballot. That's why this news has broken the way it has. Sources telling NBC that he hasn't decided whether he's going to run formally. That's the important part to know. But he's filing in Alabama to keep those options open. Top advisor to Bloomberg saying the former mayor believes President Trump represents an unprecedented threat to our nation, and he's concerned that the current field of Democrats, this is important to understand, is not well positioned to defeat him in 2020. After the news broke yesterday, NBC's Harry Smith caught up with Senator Elizabeth Warren at an event in Raleigh, and here's what she had to say about Mayor Bloomberg.
What if Michael Bloomberg says, I'm going to run for president?
Yeah, that's up to Michael Bloomberg. But here's the deal. I think what we ought to do is we ought to be building a grassroots movement to make real change in this country. I don't think that democracy should be about people coming in and buying elections. I think what it ought to be about...
Is this pointed at Michael Bloomberg?
It's pointed at everybody who thinks the way to run this democracy is through the billionaires, the corporate executives, the PACs. It's about how we think democracy works, because we got a problem in this country. And that is, it is a democracy that's working great for those at the top. It's a democracy that's working great for the corporate executives. It's a democracy that's working great for the giant multinational corporations. It's not working for much of anybody else. And when you've got a government, a democracy that's working great for those at the top and not for much of anyone else, that's corruption. It's corruption pure and simple. And we got a chance in 2020 to turn that around. We got a chance to say, we're going to build this one from the ground up. We're going to build a movement across this country. And we're going to say to all the billionaires, you get a vote, but you only get one vote. And here's the bottom line. There's a whole lot more of us than there is of them.
What she said there, she was right on a lot of levels in terms of the way the party's going to react to Mayor Bloomberg. The rest of what she said, I wish Sam Zell was here to say, because that was a crock of shih tzu, a lot of what she just said, that it's not working for anyone else. But what she is saying is that the real heart and soul and energy of the Democratic Party is in taking big money out of political influence. And
I think there's a loud...
Let's make a bet right now. I'll bet you whatever you want about. I'll give you odds that he doesn't eventually run. This is a trial balloon. It's not going to go well. It's going to be Howard Schultz 2.0, only worse. And so I say he doesn't run. That's a trial balloon. Right. And him actually getting the nomination is a pipe dream. So I got two things, a trial balloon and a pipe dream.
And I don't know. Clearly, he thinks that Joe Biden is not going to get
thinks,
the.
No, thinks, no, I'm saying he thinks. But 75% of Democrats are satisfied with the candidates that they have right now.
85% according to the Wall Street Journal and NBC poll.
He comes along, Mr. 54 billion from New York City, takes a look at what everyone else thinks are pretty good candidates, and says, all these guys stink, man. I said that Biden, I said if he was going to, you know, if he was, I'd let him go if he had a chance. Now I'm deciding with my 54 billion, he doesn't have a chance.
Can I ask you a different question?
It's so bad, Andrew.
Can I ask you a different question?
So presumptuous, so arrogant, and it's a rich guy telling us.
Can I ask you a question that I just don't understand?
Yeah.
To me, I look at Mayor Bloomberg, and I, hold on, and I look
it's
on the merits.
Dream,
no, no,
and I know.
I, no, no, not an elitist dream. I look on the merits of what he did to New York City. I look on the merits of what
Once
he did
again,
as a business person.
A
I look on the merits
person.
Of what he did
know,
as actually as close to an independent as you could ever imagine.
He was an independent at one point.
He was a Republican at one point.
I mean, yes. He just became a Democrat last year. The
so
year before.
So
my,
the question that I've always had, that I have for you is why would you be dismissive of him?
I honestly do not have a horse in this
because
I don't care. I don't.
Because
what
I would,
you want to do with the Democratic?
It's not what I want to do with the Democratic Party.
What the Democrats want to do, I'm fine with him. I'm just telling you.
Right.
He's not going to run because he doesn't have a chance.
But let's say he does run.
Okay.
What does that do in terms of splitting the vote? Does it affect Warren's chances at all? Does it take some votes away from Warren and Sanders?
Is it, as an independent, it would absolutely
it will.
I don't know what it
obviously
does,
he or. Obviously he'll takes from Biden.
Oh, yes.
Obviously he
yes.
takes from Buttigieg on day one. Actually,
right.
he takes
so
from Buttigieg immediately.
Does he lessen Warren's chances? I guess is the question because that's what the markets care about. The markets care about whether or not Warren. Will remain
well within the party.
Know,
that's the complicated
so
part.
Weird,
it's when
dude.
You get to, it's the difference between a primary and when you get to the national election. Are there lots of disenfranchised Democrats mm-hmm. who look at Elizabeth Warren and think that she's too far to the left? 100%. Are there a lot of independents who look that way? Are there people who either wouldn't come out to vote at all because of it, or dare I say, might even vote for Trump? I think there are. And that's what I think he's looking at. Now, whether you think there's enough of those people, I don't know.
I mean, you looked at predicted. He's
well predicted,
he went from
right?
2% to 6 or 7% on just getting the nomination. I think Elizabeth Warren went down a couple of points on getting the nomination. Buttigieg went down a couple mm-hmm. of points. But, you know, with all the entire story we've been talking about with Elizabeth Warren is the billionaire bashing and Lee Cooperman and all that. So it's almost like he comes. Riding to the rescue of a billionaire comes riding to the rescue of the other billionaires. That's not going to play in the AOC wing of the of
no.
The
it's going to play
party.
Terribly.
I
it's going to play terribly.
She
will then get used against him.
I think this is the trial balloon where he's going to go. Wow! All my friends in New York City told me this was a good idea. This is going over like a lead balloon. Do you like the idea that the first state that he. Alabama?
That's
what Bloomberg's going to play in Alabama.
But by the way,
City guy
this is not a trial. This is. I know you're calling it a trial balloon. By default, he has to do
it. I think
it's
a lead balloon.
I know he does
because if he's
the deadlines are soon.
I just think it's funny that Alabama. You know, I just Andrew. I just think it's going to be Howard Schultz 2.0, and he's an attractive candidate to a lot of people, especially in the circles around here with what he did in New York City. But not everybody in the country knows what he did in New York City. His name recognition isn't even that great in the rest of the country.
Well,
look,
Mayor
he's got
Pete's
a lot of work
recognition
cut out for him.
No, this is zero when he entered.
But I don't know who's advising him. And I think he's probably well-intentioned because he doesn't think, I think he's...
First of all, you're right. He may not do
this.
But
it's a bad commentary on the process we've been through, all the debates, all these people trying to build up some support, trying to move, you know, the jockeying for position to be the nominee, and then he comes in and says, you all suck. And you're so bad, so incapable of beating Donald Trump that I need, with my money, I need to come in here and help you. It's just not
but
good.
I'm not sure that should be the narrative. You're saying that has to be that's the narrative that's being built. It's getting, by the way, being built on the Republican side, too.
I don't look at the way things that I want them to be necessarily. I just look at the way they are. I feel bad. I didn't want to even weigh in on any of this because there's hope here for you because I know people would love Bloomberg to be the perfect president, but I just don't think it can happen.
We will see. We will see. We will see what will happen.
He flies to Bermuda on his private jet and talks climate change, and he walks around with a lot of armed guards for 12 years as mayor, and he's anti-guns.
And you have no dog in this hunt.
Right.
Okay.
I do have three dogs at home.
I know.
Squawk Pod. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Squawk Pod. Today's hosts on Squawk Box, Joe Kernan, Andrew Ross Sorkin, and Melissa Lee, who kicks off more of our conversation about Michael Bloomberg possibly joining the presidential race.
Robert Frank joins us now with more on Bloomberg's wealth.
Good morning, Melissa. Michael Bloomberg would be the richest man ever to run for president. And while his wealth could reshape the money landscape, it could also be his biggest liability in a now more populist Democratic Party. Now, Bloomberg sending staffers to Alabama to qualify for the primary there before today's deadline. He has not made a final decision, but people close to the former mayor saying he is seriously considering a run since he believes the current frontrunners cannot beat the president. Now, Bloomberg's net worth is $52 billion. That makes him the eighth richest American, 17 times richer than the president. His fortune comes from his nearly 90% stake in Bloomberg LP. That's the financial data and news empire that he co-founded in 1981. He was, of course, the mayor of New York City for 12 years, switching to the Republican Party and then at the end back to a Democrat. He's already given away more than $8 billion to charity, mainly focused on gun control, climate change, education, and health care. Elizabeth Warren writing to supporters last night, quote, another example of the wealthy wanting our government and economy only to work for them. Bernie Sanders also welcoming him into the race, saying the billionaire class is scared, and they should be. I mean, it's the scarlet letter right now in the Democratic Party is B for billionaire. I mean, almost automatically, no matter what he has done in his life, the fact that he is a billionaire, I think, just makes him unacceptable to so much of this electorate.
Right. It's just.
But I will say,
it's patently obvious that he's not the answer.
And Andrew, you know this. He has a private polling operation.
Yes, he does.
That is one of the best in the country. And so, A, he's not doing this blindly. He must see some path. But it also proves that he sees that none of the current front runners can beat Trump. And that, I think, is perhaps more importantly than whether he can win or not. The more important lesson is that his polling operation, which is so sophisticated and so data-centric, shows him that none of these current frontrunners can beat Trump.
Is that enough for him to beat the current frontrunners, though? Because that's what he has to run on.
That is what he has to do first. And I think that's the big open question right now, as Joe mentioned earlier, his polling numbers within the party. As many Democrats dislike him and will never vote for him, as like him. And that's the issue he faces.
All right. Thanks, Robert. Joining us now, political pollster Frank Luntz and John Hope Bryant, chairman, founder, and CEO of Operation Hope. I'll get to you in just a second, Frank. I just wanted, I have no idea what John is going to say about today. Do you like Mike Bloomberg as a candidate?
So this is very interesting. I'm glad you actually asked it that way. I've met him a couple of times. He wasn't warm when I met him, and I think he needs to warm up personally. I think that people don't vote for pocketbooks or brains. They vote for hearts and minds. President Bill Clinton once told me that America would prefer a leader who's strong and wrong than weak and right. So he needs to be strong but also likable. That said, if I want to pack a room in the inner city, I got 4 million clients at Operation Hope. If I want to pack a room in the inner city, I tell them a billionaire is coming. When Oprah Winfrey came to Atlanta, she came to Morehouse, and gave a lot of money back, they didn't introduce her as a talk show host.
Right.
They introduced her as the first black billionaire and got a standing ovation. I think it's the intent of what we're talking about here. So I think I like that he's an adult in the room. I think he's going to force the left to come back centric. I think he's going to force the right to come back and have a rational conversation. I think that if he can become likable, if he can warm up, because my population needs to feel you.
He had 12 years to warm up.
Well, maybe he will, maybe he won't. You asked me a question, I'm just giving you an answer.
Right.
I think that I wrote an article 10 years ago, if Bill Gates were black. And I said basically if Bill Gates were black, it would be 100 times more important, respectfully stated, than having a black president. And I think Obama's fantastic, by the way. I mean, fantastic. It's not the point. Bill Gates creates tens of thousands of jobs, thousands of millionaires, a few billionaires, all of which, if they look like me, would guess what, give back where they came from. So we need I go the opposite way. We need 100 billionaires who are black, 100 billionaires who are Latino, 100 billionaires who are Indian and Asian and women so that they can give back massively and create internships and opportunity in their communities. Is it positive that he's in the race? I think it is a net positive if he's about the get-it-done party, not the Republican Party, not the Democratic Party, the get-it-done party. Americans don't think that they can get it done anymore. And that's the problem. The ladder's broken. So this whole concept that we hate billionaires is actually wrong. People say, oh, I hate rich people. No, you don't. You hate rich people until you become rich. What people hate is a game system, Joe.
But don't you think within the Democratic primary voters, when you say people, I mean, you're talking about the entire American, but within the Democratic primary voters, there is this pitchfork mood right now.
Let's ask Frank, because he's
I really wish somebody could come talk to my clients. Yeah.
Frank, will he run? I don't think he's going to run, because maybe he does have polling that shows he could do well, but it just seems like he's so far from where the energy is in the Democratic Party right now.
But let's break this down. Mike Bloomberg has more money than God, and he'll be able to jump in at about Super Tuesday, which is March 3rd, and all these other candidates will have spent tens of millions of dollars in the first four primary and caucus states, and he'll be the only one with money. Second, we forget that two dozen states are open primaries, which means independents and in some cases Republicans can vote. And I would expect Mike Bloomberg to target those places so he's not just getting the Democratic vote. Third, he's something different. We've heard from these candidates again and again. They're continuing to participate in debates, the next one coming up in 10 days. The American electorate, and particularly the Democrats, like to hear something new. And fourth, on economic issues, Elizabeth Warren has proven so left-wing that she is frightening traditional Democrats. And with Joe Biden's vote collapsing in Iowa and New Hampshire.
Frank, your polling says that or your gut says that?
No, the focus groups, the research says that Biden is collapsing. He is now in fourth place in Iowa.
But collapsing because of the success of Elizabeth Warren?
He is dropping, and the votes aren't going to Mayor Pete. They're out there, and Elizabeth Warren is gaining every single week.
Doesn't that suggest to you that it would be very difficult for Mayor Bloomberg to actually win over that group, since she's going to since she seems to be so successful at the moment at persuading people that billionaires should be vilified and are terrible?
It is impossible for Mike Bloomberg to win that vote. But what I'm saying is that there is a lane right now of about a third of Democrats who are desperately looking for an alternative to Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders.
A third.
Mike Bloomberg represents that lane.
That's right. About 85% like the choices they had. You think that they have to say they like the choices they have right now. 85% were satisfied with the candidates that are in the mix right now. That's a poll.
But that's a mistaken number, because in almost half of the states, independents can vote, and they're not included in that polling. Mm. And in 19 states, Republicans can vote. They've got no one to vote for in the Republican
but
side.
But, Frank, back to this issue. Talking to hearts, John's here talking about hearts and minds. I want to know whether you think people want to vote for competence. If you're just voting for competence, actually, Mayor Bloomberg should probably be at the top of the list, given what he was able to do, both in terms of his political career and his professional career, just straight competence. But people aren't talking about that.
I think that this is a mistake that he's running as a Democrat. I would have argued, if I were advising him, that he should have run as an independent.
Howard Schultz problem.
But Howard Schultz is not Mike Bloomberg. Mike Bloomberg has shown his willingness to invest in a campaign. He's shown his willingness to be tough enough to be able to take the criticism, which Howard Schultz was not. And he's shown himself, he's the same age as Joe Biden, but he acts younger. He talks younger. He seems younger. If he had run as an independent, then he would get this disaffected Republicans, the disaffected Democrats, and that large group right dead center. I agree with what you guys are saying, that it's going to be difficult for him, but I'm not saying it's impossible.
All the excitement is about making sure that big money, big corporations, billionaires, that we get them out of the political process because they're controlling everything, and the guy to do that for us is a billionaire. That makes no sense.
For 70% of Democrats, you are correct. But, guys, you got to look at the numbers. There is still a third of the Democrats who don't buy that. There's a third of the Democrats that are scared to death of Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, and they're looking for an alternative, and they don't think Joe Biden is that.
And as an independent, I guarantee Andrew's right about that. That would be disastrous. And Bloomberg said it was disastrous. It's about Howard Schultz. That's why he said he wouldn't do it, because it would take away votes.
Give the audience the full story. Bloomberg was afraid of reelecting Donald Trump to a second term. That's why he was opposed to it.
Because of an independent running, that Howard Schultz would sap away all the votes from, like, Jill Stein or something.
No, that's not correct. It's because the votes would end up in the House of Representatives, and at the time, the Republicans controlled the House of Representatives, and he was afraid that no one would get a majority of the Electoral College, and therefore goes into the House. Give Mike Bloomberg credit. He's not an idiot. He has studied this. He's focused on this. And he knows the rules of the elections.
Do you think he has a shot of winning if he runs as an independent?
I think that he... It's tough.
You guys but you have are right. To think about it. There's a shot.
I think he has a shot at enormous disruption. I think it's positive. Not to step on your talking point. I actually massively agree with you. And again, I'm for the get it done party. I just think that he checks all the boxes and he cross fertilizes two conversations. The conversation about should we be socialism or capitalism. I think he creates a whole new narrative, because I think when Henry Ford came on the scene and created the middle class, we said bravo, because the wealth actually helped those at the bottom of the pyramid. We are not seeing that ladder anymore, and that's what people resent. And they see, there's no way I'm going to get there. I resent you. There must be something wrong with that system. Right. Number two, politically, he checks all the boxes of a new conversation. He can create jobs.
Come on.
He's given back to underserved communities. Okay. He's built a city. He's a rational person. He's an adult in the room. He's got a heart and a head. A compassionate heart and a liberal head. I mean, a conservative head. I think that he changes the conversation, which I think we need right now.
You still think he doesn't run?
I don't think he runs. I don't think he does. We'll see.
Okay. Thank you for all of this.
Next up on Squawk Pod, yesterday's China tariff phase-out that may have been oversold.
Cats trying to wrangle them together.
And today's top corporate stories.
When's the last time you were at a Gap?
When's the last time I was anywhere?
That's you, sir.
Huh? It is.
We're waiting for you.
We're waiting for you.
Okay.
You're listening to Squawk Pod. Here's Joe Kernan.
A quick update on the China trade war. Yesterday at this time, we reported that China's Commerce Ministry was saying it struck a deal with the U.S. to roll back existing tariffs as a part of the ongoing trade talks. But now Reuters is reporting the move faces fierce internal opposition in the White House and from outside advisors. Cats trying to wrangle them together in our White House. It's happening over there. What is funny is that, you know, usually our hopes are dashed by China saying something about, you know, a deal. Now it's like China's saying, yeah, we're ready. And now we're saying, we're not taking tariffs. I don't know, Eunice. It's every day it's something, right?
Yeah, actually, it was really unusual yesterday when the Commerce Ministry was really talkative, which is something that we don't see over here very often. But the spokesperson was speaking at length about the trade talks and the latest about the concept that China and the U.S. would be phasing out the tariffs. So what's interesting, I think, is what you were just discussing about that conflict that appears to be forming, or maybe it's always been there in the White House, that it looks as though they're conflicted about whether or not phasing out tariffs is on the negotiating table and whether or not the U.S. should do it if it is. So economic advisor Larry Kudlow appeared to confirm to Bloomberg News that tariffs and the phase out would be part of the discussions when he said that tariff agreements and concessions would be included if there is a phase one deal. Now, that seems to contradict trade advisor Peter Navarro, who spoke with Fox Business saying that removing existing tariffs is not a condition to a deal. So opponents like Navarro have been concerned that if the tariffs are lifted, that could mean that the U.S. would lose its leverage in the trade negotiations. But the Chinese have been very consistent since yesterday. The Commerce Ministry, the Foreign Ministry today, and the state media have all said that the phase out of tariffs is and has been part of the discussion and is a key condition, actually, for a successful trade deal. Guys?
All right, Eunice, thank you. Futures are still up. I don't know what that, they go up every day. Who knows?
Our top corporate story, shares of Disney up sharply after its fourth quarter results topped expectations. The company reporting earnings of $1.07 a share on revenue of $19.1 billion. The results coming just days before its streaming service, Disney Plus, will be launched. Speaking exclusively with CNBC yesterday, Disney CEO Bob Iger says the service is ready to go.
Well, it's ready to go. I'm glad to say. We tested it in the Netherlands. We'll be talking about that a bit on our call, and it was quite successful. Now, the product in the Netherlands did not have original content, but it was extremely well received, not just in terms of the number of subscribers, but the user reaction to it. You know, very, very navigable, meaning easy to use, elegant, great access to our brands and our storytelling.
Joining us right now to talk about the streaming environment and more, actually want to talk to you about some WeWork news. There's a lot of tech and media news out. And Ed Lee, no better person to talk about it. Media, you're really, we'll call you a media reporter, but you're media. Also media tech.
Media tech, because
TMT.
Media is tech. Tech
TMT.
Is media. There's no, there's that.
We're in the TMT land.
TMT, right.
TMT is what
we're looking
say.
In the Wall Street terms.
Do people even talk about telecom anymore? Is that like a thing?
Well, so we do talk about telecom right. In terms of AT&T doing HBO Max.
But they're media
Verizon
too.
Doing deals with Disney Plus.
So we were just talking.
Okay, what's the story on this stock? Or what is the idea? What are we supposed to be looking at? Right. Yes, it's supposed to be a growth story in this smaller new segment. Thing is, they're going to be losing money in that segment for a few years. Bob Iger has made that indication a bunch of times. He did a good job of explaining it to Wall Street so that even though their profits are down, they're like,
right.
Their stock goes up, right? That's how that story works. So, yes, they've got a growth story there. But I think the way to think about whether it's Disney Plus or HBO Max, you know, they call it direct-to-consumer, but that's a bit of a misnomer, right? Because they're relying on Verizon to jumpstart a bunch of these,
right.
The freebies, right? They worked out a deal with Amazon where now Disney Plus you can get through the Fire Stick,
right.
Which is connects. They're going to work out a deal with all the other cable guys, really, to help them sell.
But it's not a true bundle. I mean, they're not. It's not a true bundling program. It's an add-on program,
it's an add-on.
Which, by the way, has been very helpful for CBS All Access, for example, I think
right.
was plugged into that Amazon service and,
right.
And so many of these others.
And, you know, with Comcast, they cut a deal with Netflix years
right.
ago. That was huge for both companies, right? So, but what I mean is that these guys, the streamers
but how much
are going to rely.
Well, we don't know
they're
yet.
At the mercy of
they
the platform
could be at the mercy
still,
of the
is what you're saying.
Right.
Exactly that could
right.
be a point of pain
right.
down the road.
And more point of
versus
negotiations.
Versus Comcast, which is not going to be reliant on
they're not going to be reliant on
platforms.
It because people aren't going to lose their broadband connections, right?
Yeah.
If anything, you know, if you as a consumer have issues with your streaming service, you're going to call up whether it's Netflix or Disney or AT&T now as opposed to Comcast or Charter or like Dish.
Right. We're going to switch to WeWork because
yes.
There's some employees that have written some letters. What do you make of this? What's happening there?
Well, so Silicon Valley has been fueled for decades now on this idea of sort of this enchanted new world of we're going to change the universe through technology. We can do it better than anyone else. Aside from the big profits and the big pay, the promise is that you can participate in
right.
this new revolution. It's happened.
That was the promise of WeWork.
That was
the
promise
of community.
WeWork. But there was also the promise of Google. That was all the promise
right.
of Facebook. So now you're seeing company, you know, the rank and file, they're
right.
sort of, they're lashing out against their bosses, right? Happened at Google, happened at Facebook.
So what happens to WeWork if all these employees, are they going to walk?
They're not going to walk, come on, right? Like, it's a paying job. I think they want to have a stake. Now,
right, but if you're SoftBank, having just given away $1 billion to Adam, having lost a small fortune already, are you now like,
more?
Yeah, sure, we want to help you. We want to give you more, too.
Well, you know, there's this still concept of collective bargaining, right? If WeWork employees are serious about having a seat at the table around this, they could certainly
unionize.
They could unionize. Again, I don't think that's the Silicon Valley way at all. Even for places like Google, Facebook, where
right.
you know they have some sort of similar issues.
I don't really
with management.
Understand the employees' point of view. I mean, aren't they fortunate that SoftBank stepped in and basically bailed the entire company out?
I think they're absolutely fortunate, but I think they don't like the fact that Adam Neumann walked away with, you know, $1 billion+ for effectively mismanaging the company.
Final quick question. Have you been watching, this is totally unrelated, have you
sure.
been watching The Morning Show? The Morning Show
on
Apple?
I caught the first.
Yeah. So you saw this article in The Wall Street Journal about
it's basically a commercial for
every other scene. Where is my phone? I think I've lost my phone this morning. I'm going to have to use Find My Phone find my phone. I am.
I have my phone here. So
here, you can get a product placement.
Leave it.
I don't know if I left it at home. I don't know what's going on.
I have something that's so important. If I leave it somewhere, I have to go back.
But it was definitely blatant.
Bad.
Like
in every other scene, you see the phone. And it feels blatant.
Well, also, it's like when you're it's
really
focused
terrible.
On the screen.
It feels
like
blatant.
You're kidding me.
No, it does. I actually said it to Pilar, my wife. I said, we were watching the morning show. I said, did you see this is before that article came
Come
out.
On.
I said, there's so many shots of the phone.
Is everybody wearing a watch? And
I don't even notice the watch.
No,
I didn't watch them. But there was just, the phone plays, look, in our lives, the phone plays a huge role. So maybe that is realistic.
But
you're constantly seeing
in movies. We've been seeing that for years. We even see it in serials now. So, of course, it's going to be the thing. Like, ultimately, the show itself, I
right.
mean, you know.
But I haven't seen anybody with an Android yet.
right? There's no Samsung phone.
No, there are no Samsung phones. There's no...
Right, a little realism.
Unrealistic, right?
A little realism would be, you know...
Well, look, it is the media world, though, right? Like, media people tend to be Apple consumers.
Yeah, but occasionally then you have that one guy who's got the Android, and then your messages are green, right. And it's very upsetting because you don't know if it's delivered
the
or not.
The green or the blue is a huge... You know, if that became a plot point in the
it's
series...
It's like red state, blue state.
Shares of Gap, though, we should talk about this morning, tumbling after CEO Art Peck announced he is stepping down. It is happening effective immediately. Peck had served as CEO since 2015 and worked at Gap for almost 15 years. The company's current non-executive chairman, Robert Fisher, will serve as interim CEO after previously holding that position back starting in 2007. The company also slashed its full-year earnings outlook.
The timing is interesting because they had just announced in February that they would split the Gap from the rest of the brands. Peck was supposed to be the CEO of RemainCo, and now he is out. So,
when's the last time you were at a Gap?
When's the last time I was anywhere?
Shop. Well, okay,
you
fine.
You don't shop at all.
No. So, Melissa, when's the last time you were at a Gap or
is
a Banana
it a
Republic?
Physical Gap?
Or an Old Navy?
Zero.
Or an
but, I mean, I will go to the Gap because they always have 40% off of everything. But I will only buy things when it's 40% off because I know it's going to be 40% off.
I mean, they dress us here. That's what
that's so.
And I have to go meet with people. At places.
Right.
Zenya.
Do you?
Just in case you're wondering.
Fancy.
Fancy schmancy.
Fancy schmancy.
With an F and an S.
Wow.
Capitalized.
I didn't know that. Good for you.
But you're the biggest clothes horse in here.
You think I'm the biggest clothes horse in here?
Absolutely. You notice people come in and
oh,
go, oh
I,
my
I
God.
Love clothes. Oh, yeah. I do love
peak
clothes.
Things.
Peak lapels on the blazer.
I mean,
or
he
on
knows.
A,
he goes, is that a... Boss, Jack. I mean, you know the suits. You can tell when they come in. You know.
I do. I do love clothes. I admit. I'm very happy to admit that I love clothes.
Okay.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, there's not. I like. You know, I love my Lululemon pants. They're stretchy and they have a zipper on where I put my wallet.
The iconic New York City Charging Bull sculpture is moving away from its current home. The statue, of course, has been in Bowling Green Park now for about 30 years. The mayor's office says plans are underway to move the statue closer to the New York Stock Exchange. New York City officials say safety concerns are behind that relocation. The sculpture is a frequent site of protests and poses a traffic risk when crowds spill into the road from the median around it. I've spent quite some time around that. Everybody tries to go down
they
there.
Just walk take in their the pictures street to around. Take the picture.
Take
the
their
cars
picture.
Are...
So you put it right in front of the exchange or near the exchange. And by the way, right around the exchange, there are no cars anymore. So you could
right,
pull this off.
I mean, if you're truly woke... We probably had to just melt that thing down and use the metal for
but the carbon footprint of melting it might be very large,
too,
so it's a real quantity.
You would just prefer to have a bear out there?
No, not a bear. I don't want to give any more publicity to capitalism in any form, bearish or bullish.
It would be a symbolic melting of the bull.
Symbolic of, I don't know, we need some village, it takes a village type globalist symbol there. I would prefer.
You would?
Wouldn't you?
No.
Do you think it's big bull?
Yes, support capitalism, my friend. Stop with this. Stop with this. Free markets. Free markets.
Ooh, what's happening here?
Free market. Free market capitalism.
How are I'm you? Yanking his
I
chain.
I know, and he's yanking back.
My chain.
I'm actually not yanking your chain. How
you think that? You
what
think
other
that
form,
in this day and age?
What other system in the world has ever taken people out of poverty the way capitalism...
He's trying to get you to say those things, Andrew, and you are.
Because it's true.
Yes, it is true.
Because it is true.
Absolutely true.
But seriously, don't you think that symbol with where a lot of, you know, the Sanders supporters, et cetera, they don't like that symbol.
They don't like capitalism.
It's a woke... No, they don't like the symbol of the bull.
Right.
And if you're truly woke, I think we... What is it made out of? Do you know? I mean, I'm sure we can make some really good stuff.
I imagine that it's
copper or
bronze
or something. It could be better used in another... If we melt it.
That's the show for today. Thanks for listening. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 a.m. Eastern. To get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears, subscribe to Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. We'll meet you back here on Monday.
Where's my phone? I think I've lost my phone this morning. I'm going to have to use Find My Phone. I don't know if I left it at home. I don't know what's going on this morning.
Hopefully, Andrew will have found his phone by then. Have a great weekend.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.